And our final reading is on a little insert inside your sheets, if you've got one of those. It's from the prophet Micah, which is in the Old Testament. So this is an ancient prophecy written some 700 years before Jesus was born. So Micah chapter 5, verse 1 on your sheets. "Now muster your troops, O daughter of troops. Siege is laid against us. With a rod they strike the judge of Israel on the cheek. But you, O Bethlehem Ephrathah, who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to be ruler in Israel, whose coming forth is from of old, from ancient days. Therefore he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has given birth. And then the rest of his brothers shall return to the people of Israel. And he shall stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they shall dwell secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be their peace." I'll be home for Christmas. It's one of the all-time classic Christmas songs. It was recorded first back in 1943 by Bing Crosby. And it was written for soldiers in World War II who longed to be home for Christmas. And it stood the test of time because it's not just soldiers who long to be home for Christmas. There's something about Christmas, isn't there, which makes us long to be home. And we do whatever we can to get there. And it's really hard if, for whatever reason, we can't make it at Christmas time, can't make it home. This longing to be home for Christmas is an echo of a spiritual longing, a longing to be home, to come home in an ultimate sense, that is to come home to God, a longing which can be fulfilled because of Christmas. That is the message of this ancient prophecy I've just read, this prophecy from the Bible, the Old Testament book of Micah, written almost 3,000 years ago. We actually looked at the first half of this, so the first two paragraphs, verses 1 and 2, a couple of weeks ago in our carol service on December the 11th. And if you weren't here for that, as many as you wouldn't have been, you can listen to that online on the St. Peter's Barge website. We saw that the people back then, which was the 8th century BC, they were in a time of crisis. So their city was a city under siege. This was the 8th century BC. So they were under siege by powerful enemies. And we thought back then of that being a picture of the human condition, that we are besieged by forces beyond our control, by worries, by fears, by sin, by judgment, by death. But we saw back then that God promised to send a ruler to rescue them and to rescue us, and so that we would know who he is when he came, God told us his address in advance. So he revealed that this rescuer ruler would be born, it says there in verse 2, in the little town of Bethlehem. Centuries passed. And then finally he came in the person of Jesus. So that was a bit we looked at before, verses 1 and 2. Now in verses 3 and 5, so the third and fourth paragraphs on your sheet, God reveals what this Bethlehem baby would do when he grew up. So God reveals the difference that he would make. It is through him that we can get home for Christmas, home in an ultimate sense. First, let's look at why we long to come home. So verse 3 on the sheet there, the beginning of the third paragraph says, "Therefore he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has given birth." So it says that he, God, would give them, that is the people, give them up, that is abandon them. God would abandon his people. And that describes a historical reality, and it describes a spiritual reality. So historically, God gave up his Old Testament people because they rebelled against him. So in judgment, God gave them up to powerful enemies. In the 8th century BC, it was the Assyrians who laid siege to Jerusalem. And then in the 6th century BC, it was the Babylonians. And they took the people away. They took them into exile in Babylon. They were exiled from the promised land. as God foretold in chapter 4, verse 2, he said, you shall go to Babylon. Now, when the people were in exile, they longed to be home. The people in exile longed to be home. One of the Psalms, which is the songbook in the Bible, Psalm 137, was a song written by the people in exile. And this is how it begins. By the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. That sound familiar, those words? Sound familiar? Why does it sound familiar? Because of Boney M's hit track in 1978. Do you remember that one? By the rivers of Babylon. One of the top 10 best-selling singles of all time in the UK. The people longed for God to bring them home. That was the historical situation in exile. But we're saying that is a picture of our spiritual condition. That we are in exile as well. Did you know that? That we are in exile. We have been ever since our first parents, at the dawn of human history, were cast out of the Garden of Eden, away from God's presence. Humanity has been in exile ever since. Far from God, far from home. And all the problems in our world are symptoms of that exile. But the Bible warns us of an even greater problem, that this exile from God will continue into eternity forever unless we come home to God in this life. So there is a longing deep in our hearts to come home to God, to return to Eden. And some of us here will recognize that longing and others may be unaware of it. But it's a longing that's expressed in one of the carols we just sung. We sung, O come, Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel that mourns in lonely exile here. It may be that our longing to be home for Christmas or our longing for holidays in paradise, that these are echoes of this deeper spiritual longing, a sort of memory trace left in our souls. I guess all of us have known the experience of feeling homesick. Maybe it was as a child, you were sent off on summer camp, or maybe as a child you were sent away to boarding school, maybe even a foreign country. Maybe later in life you've been abroad on business, sitting alone in a hotel, a restaurant. Maybe you've been traveling around on the other side of the world and feeling desperately homesick. Such homesickness is an echo of a spiritual homesickness. So spiritually, it's like we're in a foreign land and we're a long way from home, and there's this sense of sort of cosmic dislocation. We long for home because we live in exile. So how do we get home? Well, the people would be given up in exile. Verse 3 says, until what? Have a look at verse 3. It says, until the time when she who is in labor has given birth. The end of the exile would come with the birth of this Bethlehem baby, a special baby who would bring his brothers home. So verse 3, then the rest of his brothers shall return to the people of Israel. His brothers refers in the first place to the people of Israel who had been separated. So the kingdom back then had been split in two centuries before. The northern people had been deported. The southern kingdom, they would soon go into exile themselves. But this brother who was prophesied, would bring them all home and reunite them. And so in the fullness of time, the promised child came. Born in Bethlehem to a poor Jewish family, he is the one through whom we come together in unity, a new people, a new family, the church, and we come home to God. So through trusting in him and his death for us, his death in our place on the cross to pay for our sins so we can be forgiven, through following him we come home to God. And we come home to one another in this world and the next. Although we long, don't we, to be home for Christmas, sometimes when we get there, the reality is a bit disappointing. Don't know if you've ever found that, but you know, we're so full of anticipation, going home for Christmas, and then when we get there, sadly, you know, relationships can go south. There's conflict. There's arguments. And our longings are left frustrated. They always will be at some level. Because the ultimate coming home for Christmas is fulfilled in Jesus. It's through him that we truly come home. We come home to God. We come home to one another together as members of his family. And that is an experience which will only be fully realized in the age to come, but it's something we get a foretaste of now in the church. The John Lewis Christmas ad this year, I guess, struck a chord with many. I'm sure you've seen it, about this man who goes out of his way to welcome a teenage girl into his family as a foster child. So this middle-aged man, he tries to learn to skateboard. And he takes the knocks, doesn't he, that come with that. He's all padded up and so on. And he's doing all this so that when this girl arrives, she will feel loved and welcomed and cared for because she's a skateboarder. And so God has gone out of his way to welcome us into his family. Not just taking some knocks on a skateboard, but sending Jesus into the world to live the perfect life, to die the death that we deserve, and to be raised to rule over us. And through trusting in him, we are adopted into his family. And through that, our deepest longings as human beings begin to find their fulfillment. And that is what the final verses, verses 4 to 5, explain. So let's just look finally at what we get by coming home to God. Verse 4 says, "He shall stand and shepherd his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God." The shepherd was a familiar figure in biblical times. It became a picture of the ruler of God's people. So back in the Old Testament, God took David from being a shepherd who cared for sheep, and he made him shepherd of his people as king to care for that greater flock. But one day, according to this ancient prophecy, the ultimate shepherd would come, and he would rescue and he would rule the people of God, a caring shepherd who would trust in the Lord and his strength. And so centuries later, 700 years later, after this prophecy, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, you remember the shepherds, we had it in our first reading, the shepherds in the fields, they came to see the newborn baby lying in the manger. But little did they realize that the baby in the manger before them was the ultimate shepherd. Jesus would later say, when he grew up, he would say, "I'm the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep." So he said there will be one flock and one shepherd. And so in coming home to God, we get cared for by this shepherd. He promises to walk with us through this life and then through the valley of death and out the other side into his eternal kingdom. Notice that this shepherd would have a global impact. Verse 4 says, "Now he shall be great to the ends of the earth." So his greatness would be acknowledged by the whole world. Now the fulfillment of this prophecy has been utterly remarkable when you think about it. So Bethlehem, where he was born, was this obscure little town. It was Nowhereville, in the tiny country of Israel. This Bethlehem baby would move up north, back up north, would spend most of his life, his working life, as a manual laborer, as a carpenter. I mean, apart from a brief spell out of the country as a refugee, as a child in Egypt, he'd never travel abroad. He'd never write a book. He would end up being executed as a common criminal in his mid-30s. And he left behind just a handful of dejected followers. And yet, if he is the one that this prophecy is talking about, the prophecy says he would be great to the ends of the earth. And so he is. This Jesus is now the most famous person in history. Billions follow him. Even those who don't follow him, they use his name as a swear word. He's at the center of the biggest, the most diverse, multicultural, multi-ethnic movement the world has ever known. He shall be great to the ends of the earth. But his greatness speaks not just of his fame, it speaks of his power, his rule. And because of his power, he can bring us the security and the peace that we long for. So verse 4 says, "And they shall dwell secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be their peace." They shall dwell secure. We long for that, don't we? Security. How much we long for security. Internet security, financial security, international security, job security, relationship security. This is saying ultimate security comes from being part of the flock of this great shepherd. Cared for by him, watched over by him, and he will bring his flock safely home to his eternal kingdom. Eternally secure. So security, and it says, the last line, he shall be their peace. Hebrew word for peace, shalom, speaks of total well-being. Peace in all its dimensions. Peace with God, we're reconciled to him. Peace with one another, living in harmony together. And peace within, in our troubled hearts. I mean, home as an ideal is a place of security and peace. And this says that is what we get in coming home to God. What do you want for Christmas? What are you hoping to find tomorrow morning under the Christmas tree? What do you give the person who has everything? Well, surely peace would be up there, wouldn't it, for most of us? Well, this says he shall be their peace. And when Jesus returns, the Bible says that he will restore peace to the universe as he finally overthrows all his enemies, all evil, and establishes his rule forever. And then at last, the universe will be at peace again. And God will make his home with his people forever. Apparently, one of the greatest films of all time is Steven Spielberg's 1978 movie, E.T. There's a bit of a 1978 theme coming through in this talk. Maybe I'm showing my age there a little bit. But if you've seen E.T., it's basically about this alien, this extraterrestrial E.T., who's left behind on Earth. And he's befriended by this little boy called Elliot. And Elliot, together with his friends and family, they've got to try and help E.T. find a way back home. Now, apparently the film's concept was based on an imaginary friend that Spielberg created after his parents' divorce. So when Spielberg's parents divorced in 1960, Spielberg, he basically filled the void by having this imaginary alien companion, someone whom he later described as a friend who could be the brother I never had and a father I didn't feel I had anymore. This imaginary friend. Some people assume that the Christmas story is a little different, that it's just about an imaginary friend we've invented to fill the void because we feel lonely in the universe. An imaginary brother, an imaginary father figure. But there's nothing imaginary about Jesus Christ, is there? His coming was foretold in this and many other ancient prophecies in the Old Testament, and these prophecies were fulfilled in time and place in history. How do we account for the fact that the universe that we observe is constantly expanding? Well, scientists conclude, don't they, that at some point, if you work back, at some point in the past, there must have been a big explosion, a big bang. In the same way, the world has witnessed, over the past two millennia, a constantly expanding movement, which is the church. How do we account for that? How do we account for this phenomenon? Well, when you trace it back, you get to a first century birth in Bethlehem, a death in Jerusalem, and an explosion of life from a garden tomb. In Jesus, God came to dwell among us. And when Jesus returns, he will make his home with us for good. And then in that new world, for those who trust in him, there will be no more pain, or death, or sadness, or suffering. And there'll be no more longing to go home for Christmas, because we will finally be home with God and his people forever.